Hello and welcome back to Kvikmyndapod, an Icelandic cinema podcast. I'm Rob Watts, and as ever, I'm joined by my good friend Ellie Cawthorne for another journey through the world of Icelandic cinema. This week's film is Cruelty, or Grimd, from 2016. It follows detectives in Reykjavik as they attempt to solve the murder of two young girls. Starring Margrét Vilhjálmsdóttir and Svein Olafur Gunnarsson, this is an icy cold and very bleak Nordic noir. After Ellie and I recorded our chat, it came to our attention that the director of Cruelty, Anton Sigurdsson, has been sentenced for embezzlement and money laundering with regard to the film. Our covering the film obviously does not endorse Anton's actions, but it does support everyone who starred and who helped to make the film. We're celebrating their work rather than ignoring the film entirely. If you've not yet seen it, it's available to rent or buy on Apple TV in the UK. Right then.
Síðastliðin laugardag gekk vegfarandi fram á tvö lík inn í Heiðmörk og teljum við að tvöfalt morð sé að ræða.
Við ætlum að biðja þeim að bera kennsl á þær. Þegar þú ert tilbúin.
Þessi kona eintur. Hún hefur rústað lífi mínu. Fleiri manna til að fulla í einhverjum draumórum sem nefur.
Vakna þér. Ertu uppborðið? Hvað gerist svo?
Fór út að labba.
Hvert fórst að labba?
Ellíðardal.
Hvenær hittur stjörnur?
Ég vil tala við Eddu.
Já, hún vill ekki tala við þig!
Hi, Rob.
Hello, Ellie.
How are you?
I am good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Yeah?
Ready to say goodbye to February.
Yeah, very much done with February. Looking forward to some sun,
mm-hmm.
to some spring leaves, spring flowers, spring birds, all that comes with, you know, moving forward with the year. I feel like the film we're going to talk about today, like, it's almost the perfect way to end February. Like,
yeah,
choose the grimmest possible subject matter, the dreariest possible kind of time of year, and then move on and upwards.
What you're seeing, this is a moment of catharsis then.
In a way, yes. Although I'm not sure there's a lot of catharsis in this
no.
film. So this film is called Hilariously, or so, not Hilariously, but this film is called Grimd.
Grimd. It's a great name.
It is. And in English, it's almost very, very fitting because this film is very grim.
Mm-hmm.
I think Grimd, at least the Icelandic title for this film is Cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from 2016. But the word grim kind of is just so perfect, isn't it?
Yeah. Weirdly, I think grim is better suited as a title for this film than Cruelty.
Perhaps as an overall kind of, yeah.
Grimness.
Yeah. A lot of people suffer a lot of cruelty, though. It is true. Mm. So this is Anton Sigurdsson's second film. He's a director. In 2014, he became the youngest director in Icelandic history when he released a film called Secrets and Lies. So maybe one day we'll come back to that. And it stars Margrét Vilhjálmsdóttir, Svein Olafur Gunnarsson, Petter Oskar, Hannes Ole Augustsson, Salome Gunnarsdóttir and Helgi Björnsson. Now, there's a lot of Icelandic names that may not mean a lot to you, but we recognise a lot of them.
Yeah, many familiar faces.
Yeah, and we'll talk about their characters as we go, but I'll start with a little synopsis and
please
we'll move
do.
Forwards. So when two young sisters are found murdered in a forest in the wintry suburbs of Reykjavik, detectives Edda Davidsdóttir and Joey Schramm are put on the case. With a long list of suspects, not much to go on, and the need to solve the murders fast, they struggle to pin the blame on any of the many Icelandic sex offenders.
Mm.
It's a Nordic noir, kind of.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. Is this film based on a book?
I don't believe so, no.
Because it almost felt like it is. There was a lot of kind of alleyways we go down that don't really lead anywhere.
Yeah.
And a kind of recurring theme of find a sex offender, it might be them.
Yeah.
Rule them out or otherwise, and then move on to the next person.
It was kind of like procedural, but also we're going kind of round and round in circles like a teddy bear.
It didn't feel like they were kind of moving through this investigation. It felt like, look down this way, no, look down this way, no.
Yeah, it wasn't very linear, was it?
No.
Which is kind of interesting in a way, but it did kind of feel like you were kind of just jumping in and out, going to different places. Sometimes you had no idea why you were in a place. Something might happen that didn't necessarily make any sense.
Or didn't kind of lead on to something else.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe this is what it's like actually to do a police investigation, where you just have to follow up a lot of dead ends, basically.
Well, yeah. Nothing's
Whereas
gonna...
usually in the classic TV or film police procedural, you'll kind of make one discovery that leads to another thing, which then unlocks a different part of the case and then leads you to a fourth place. But maybe in real life, it's not really like that.
It certainly feels like that would be more of a true-to-life scenario. I don't know with this film whether... Basically, the police decide that two young girls... I mean, what a tragic way to start a film. Beautifully shot image of the two girls sort of cuddling in the snow. It's horrible, but like really nicely shot. But the police decide, oh, well, they're young, so let's go call in all the... sex offenders.
Or the paedophiles.
And I sort of understand that to a degree, but like if that's literally all you've got.
They don't really seem to go much on like evidence from the scene.
No, I don't think there is much evidence. No. There's certainly nothing in any little baggies or.
All there is the white van with no number plate.
What the hell? But how would. This is one of the many random things that happen. So I get that unnamed detective with the blonde hair is kind of doing all the grunt work.
Unnamed detective.
Is she named? I don't know what her name is.
No, I don't think she is.
But she has no character development. She doesn't have a name. She just does some of the work and has some lines. But we don't know who she is.
Again, maybe there are just kind of too many characters in this film. Like, there was, like, loads of random police people that are, I would say, extraneous and unnecessary.
Maybe. I mean, police departments do have a lot of people.
Yeah, but we don't need to,
I don't know. I don't think every murder can be solved by just the one lone detective, which is quite nice in a way to see that. But that white van, we'll come back to the relationship between Edda and Yoey. And unnamed blonde detective. but she basically says, look at all the CCTV, look at all the ATMs. Looking for what? And then she just says, the only thing I found was this white van with no number plates.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of suspicious, but what was she looking for?
Not entirely sure.
No, it's a bit random. Should we talk about Edda? And Yoey. So Edda seems to be, it's kind of weird because then neither detective is set up as like our Detective Erlander or that kind
Wallander.
Of classic, or Wallander, the classic, I don't know, grizzled detective, lone wolf kind of thing.
But I think she's that, if anyone, you know, she's got this dark history and in terms of the fact that she reveals later that she was abused as a child herself and she's on a kind of quest for vengeance because of her own personal experience. I think she's our mayor of East Town or our Wallander, but she's just not given as much kind of character development and outside of the case.
I think that's the trouble with the film from a kind of emotional level. Is that we don't get that character development for anyone, really. And you kind of want to know who your main character is, and we don't. And I was going to ask you, I think I agree that she has been abused by her dad, But she only tells us this through having a dream, and she says it's a new dream.
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
Doesn't... Wait, now I'm gonna... Is it a dream, she says? And like, I about her father, like, coming into her room.
Yeah, because and she then... wakes up in bed with handsome dad from Wild Game.
Yeah.
And she basically says, I had a dream, it was a new one, and then we see the dream, in inverted commas, footage of dad taking her to the bedroom.
Mm.
And she says something like, I'd rather it was me than Andre, who is her brother, who is also a sex offender.
I think the understanding there, though, is that that was a that flashback.
Actually did happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think so. I'm just not sure how well handled that was. But it does give you that weight to her... to some of her decisions and some of her relationships, and the same with Andre. And it feels like everyone in this film has got some kind of heavy, heavy baggage.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't paint the best picture of life in Iceland, does it? It's basically a tour of the paedophiles of Iceland. Let's go see one. Oh, he's got something weird going on with his mum. Let's go see another. There's a weird pair of them living in a house with a creepy attic. Oh my God. And big knives. Oh, another guy is basically Norman Bates.
Can we talk about these individually? Because this is like, this is the meat of the film as well. And it's kind of fascinating how they look at all these characters.
But is it enough like of a plot to sustain the film? It's almost like somebody was like, do you know what people are really interested in? Like the worst thing that there is. Being a paedophile. So let's make a film that kind of touches on that, but maybe doesn't go under the skin or into a lot of depth with anyone. It kind of just surface level gives lots of kind of case studies almost.
I think I think you're right. I think there's a some degree they want us to fill in the blanks. But when there's that many blanks, it gets a bit, you know, confusing.
Það eru 29 dæmdir kynferðisafbrotamenn lausir á svæðinu. Af þessum 29 eru fjórir sem okkur langar til að tala við.
So, I mean, like you said, 29 people on their list of sex offenders. It's quite a lot, considering how small a country we are. Then they have like a whole handful that they want to bring in. And I've got the list of names here because...
You're like naming and shaming fictional people.
I'm going to name and shame these fictional sex offenders or paedophiles. So initially, they think it might be Hjötur, who has 13 sex crimes. Brunja, who's a child molester with multiple convictions. Ausgeir, who had one sex crime. He abused his sister's daughter and multiple assault and battery. And then the fourth one is Magni, who becomes one of our main characters, who we see at the start in a children's gymnasium sniffing underwear. Like... Yeah.
It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
It is on the nose, just like those pants were. But like, it is very on the nose and it's so in your face at the start. It's like, okay, yeah, he's a wrong'un. We get it. This is, of course, Hannes Ole Agusson, who we know from as Play Ya Ya Ding Dong.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
But I feel like also, unfortunately, it did fall back on a few... cliches or stereotypes. So the character Ragnar, who is one of these people on the suspect list we meet, he's basically just like Norman Batesing it up. Like his mum's dead, he's speaking to a doll instead of his mum.
Yeah.
Having these kind of imaginary conversations with her, which does feel like something we've seen quite a lot before.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not, he's not quite Norman Bates level. He's very simple in a way that Norman Bates was. He was far cleverer than I think Ragnar is. Mm. And the thing that this film does as well is like at least two of the characters are obviously low IQ. Mm. And Ragnar, it is creepy and it is kind of well done in the cinematic way of, you know, he's talking to his mum, but we don't see her. It's like automatically... something's wrong. And then at least it wasn't her dead body.
Yeah, which I 100% thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's that dark. It could have been.
But also, I mean, when they have the first interview with him and they're like, oh, how come you've got a scratch on your hand? And he's like, oh, I have a dog. It's a Labrador. Oh, wait, no, it's not.
It's a golden retriever.
It's a golden retriever. And I have a cur, but it's... What was his other, like, terrible, lame alibi thing?
Oh, something spilled in the car. Like, oh, it was a fish. He knocked a fish out with
I know there's
boulder.
Blood in my car, but I used a rock to kill a fish in there. And you're like, come on, arrest this guy right now. And they're like, okay, cool, see you later.
I mean, that's not... Have they seen the car yet? I don't know. It's not...
He was the most shady person.
He was so shady, but it was almost like... I don't believe you, but I also don't feel very much like you could have done this. But yeah, at what point do you make an arrest? I'm not a police officer. I don't know at what point you need some semblance of evidence.
Yeah.
But he does seem like a suspect. It makes sense. He's got a fucking wall full of photos of children.
Yeah, exactly.
Which we never fully understand. But
no.
He does at one point to Yoey say, I've got permission for all these photos.
Oh, that's fine then.
Yeah, okay.
It's there are a lot of kind of strange ends that are never followed up. Mm. One I wanted to mention was the two Yones.
Right. Yeah.
So we just see Edda turning up at a house. Presumably she's got some lead.
So she heard someone phoned in and said, the two men who murdered the girls live above me.
Yeah.
Who's making that call?
So she turns up, goes into this flat, has a kind of creepy encounter with them where there's like a noise in the attic. She goes in the attic, but there's nothing there. Mm. Comes back down, can't open the door. He comes towards her with a big, massive knife. Just happens to be chopping some vegetables, you know how it is. And then like sinisterly like loiters near her, but ultimately lets her out and nothing happens. But like what? Where did that go? It didn't add any...
It didn't add anything. I think,
apart from just like, ooh, a bit of threat and a spooky kind of horror movie energy.
Well, exactly that. I think this entire scene was just to try and creep you out.
Yeah.
Because there was no reason for us to suspect them. No reason for Edda to suspect them. The only reason that moment, that encounter is creepy is because of the way it's shot and sort of stylized. If she just turned up to a couple's door and they were cooking dinner,
yeah,
it wouldn't look like that. I don't know why he's walking at her slowly with a knife.
I wonder if
why
they
does
just
she
thought...
immediately panic that she can't get out the door.
I mean, it was a bit creepy. I wonder if they just thought we need a bit of more of a sense of threat.
I know, but why make it this gay couple who there's nothing necessarily
Do you
think they
creepy
were about
a couple?
Them? Why this again? Was it part of his scene, I felt, was trying to be quite light relief as well? It's like, oh no, he's not my son. It's like, yeah, okay, they're a couple. Fine.
But they both have the same name.
But they also have the same name, Yon and Yon.
It was a very just strangely placed moment.
It was odd. Tonally, very strange.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of unfair framing them because we're not given any reason. The only reason we think we might think they're suspicious...
There's
because...
a noise in the attic, which then was nothing.
Well, no, because houses make noises.
Do you want to know something creepy about attics that happened to me yesterday?
Did you find Annabelle in there?
No, but I came home and the attic hatch was hanging down. And our attic is... Have you seen it in it?
I've not seen inside your attic.
Oh, it's like proper creepy. It's all brown and old and like proper attic-y.
Is there stuff in there?
Yeah, yeah. There's...
Like a rocking horse.
Yeah, and a few haunted dolls, actually, as well. But yeah, it's real haunty attic vibe. So that was creepy.
Okay.
And it also has a big draft that comes down. And then my housemate got home.
The invisible man.
And was like, oh my God, I just watched Hereditary for the first time. And I was like, have you invoked...
Oh, imagine.
A demon
in the
attic.
Oh my God, Toni Collette is in your attic. Ready to cut off her neck with wire.
So that's creepy, isn't it?
That's very creepy.
I didn't tell her that about the attic. I'm going to tell her later because I thought
it would
freak her out
too much.
What,
is there something more to tell her about the attic?
No, just she didn't know that the attic had opened on its own.
Oh,
and I thought I won't tell her.
Incredibly creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds scarier than this film, yeah. This, certainly this moment in the film.
Já, ertu Svala Jónsdóttir?
Já, ég Svala.
Ertu Svala þekkur dátjón?
Já, Svala þekkur dátjón.
Á hvað hæð er?
Ég á fyrsta hæð, þeir eru annar hæð.
Ég er annar hæð?
Já.
Og eru þeir komin inn í húsið?
Já, þeir eru komin inn, geta ekki komið strax.
Ég sendi það stótt til þín strax.
Já, endilega strax.
Yeah, strange. And it's one of those moments that, like you say, kind of doesn't go anywhere or do anything. And while we're on this, I would like to talk about that moment that Edda goes to the forest. She's obviously just like doing a little scout around looking for evidence, maybe.
Wasn't that a dream?
I don't think so.
Because it was, I thought the sequence in the forest, she was there.
She gets hit by someone.
Yeah, and then she wakes up.
But she wakes up in the forest. And then stands and looks around again. Yeah. I don't know why it's there.
I don't know.
It's like, I like the idea that you've got these like elements that create a bit of tension. They look atmospheric, mm-hmm. They feel good, but they literally serve no purpose to the plot.
Yeah.
Like if someone's knocking her out, who's doing that? Why would you return to the scene of the crime?
Well, do we get into spoilers of who the murderer is?
Well, should we finish off? Because we haven't gone back to those other murders. We mentioned Magni, who is the son of a mum who seemed to like beat him.
And lock him up.
Not going to be good. He's another simple man. But he seems to have a connection to the mum of the two kids. And some kind of relationship to Edda as well.
Oh, my understanding of the connection with Edda is that he's been, you know, involved in the police, with the police before. And I think there was a general sense with quite a few people that, I guess in a small place, the police encounter the same people.
Yeah,
they know, like, who to call on. They're like, oh, who do we think could have done this? It's probably one of the people we know.
Yeah, that's true. And it did sound like from that very first moment at the school that Magni had been taken in previously, and then he would be notified again. So Edda has that relationship, I guess, as like police officer suspect thing going on, but she feels something more towards him, almost, I guess, like a kind of mothery
sympathy
figure. Yeah. Yeah. But she does have an actual relationship with someone that they don't want to suspect, but probably should.
Mm.
And that's Andri,
mm-hmm.
who we get introduced to in quite a comic scene when he's like applying for a job, which, you know what, I'm currently looking for a job.
You tempted by that approach.
And if I could get an interview, that would be brilliant. If I could coast through an interview like that, yeah. I would take anything. Because right now, the job situation is not good. Mm-hmm. But maybe I should just fly to Reykjavik.
Just say.
And just have a go at anything.
Yeah. I'm not bothered about working hard. I might be drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, give me a job anyway.
The guy's like, love your honesty.
I guess for the first half or three quarters of the film, we have Andri's timeline. We kind of follow him and we don't know who he is and we don't know how he's connected to the case.
But we do realise that there's someone Edda doesn't want to suspect, but Yoey thinks we should call him in. And eventually, it takes quite a while before they actually clarify who this guy with the long black hair is.
Mm.
He gets taken in and doesn't say anything at all. Because we see Yoey interview multiple suspects. And we see his interview technique is not quite by the book, necessarily. With Andri, he basically just tries to guilt him into confessing.
Mm-hmm.
Then with Ragnar, he kind of just makes shit up and expects him to say, yes, I did it. And then he starts throwing his photos. Not sure he was allowed to take all those photos.
And with Magni, then he just forces him to sign a false confession. It's terrible.
It's awful. It's it's a making a murderer style confession where you got this sort of heavy-handed cop just writing down exactly what he wants to have happened.
All you have to do is sign this.
And the suspect, who does ultimately sign the confession, is not of sound mind.
And he's just going to cave to the pressure.
Yeah. And even the boss even knows by the end that that Magni confession won't hold up because he's not with it. And also by the end, there are so many plot, so many holes in that story.
Mm.
You're just like, what the fuck, Yoey?
Yeah.
How can you be that desperate to, in inverted commas, solve a crime?
That you clearly know it's not that person.
Yeah, you're not solving it then, are you?
Mm.
You're like, you're just trying to make yourself look good to the cameras. And
I guess police corruption is, you know, is a real thing.
Yeah.
So that's something explored here. But again, another grim reality.
That's so true. Oh my God. And the boss, obviously played by the killer in Reykjavik Whale Watching Massacre. So we should have known.
I was trying to pin him down. Oh, it's him. But also, I mean, so many dodgy things. So obviously, Andrey is Edda's brother.
Oh my God.
And I don't think that you can really be involved in the arrest of your own family member. I think that's a conflict of interest.
I'd say so.
Get somebody else to do it. Get the unnamed blonde detective to do it.
I think she was she there also? Yeah, it was kind of weird because even Andrey's boss was like, really? This is how you're going to arrest your brother? You're going to be there?
Yeah.
It was very odd. I'm sure maybe the police force is small. But it's not small enough to not send someone else in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit weird, wasn't it?
Hvað fyrir þetta bróðir?
Hvað mennirðu?
Hann farinn að vinna?
Já, prentsmið út í bæ.
Hjá Viðari.
Viltu ekki koma aðeins út við þig strax?
Við verðum að skoða hann.
Nei.
Edda.
Nei.
Something that is never explained is why Andrey's name is on this list. Actually, I guess we do know why some of them are on the list because they kind of run through, as you did earlier, the naming and shaming.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know the story of how he's ended up there. And I guess it's probably because we want the director or the writer who wants us to be able to keep up a sympathy with him.
Yeah.
Because I think that throughout the film, we are led to be sympathetic towards him.
I would say so, and it's kind of clever of the director in that the only person I actually do feel sympathy with, okay, other than Magni at the end, is Andrey when he gets beaten up by the work colleagues who discover that he has this background, he's on a list, and he gets chased, and I was like, oh shit, they're gonna get him, and I didn't want them to catch him, because by this point you don't know.
But when in the kind of following his story through, we are put in a position actively, it's not an accident, to sympathize with him and to be on side with him.
We see him date, we see him work, and nothing about that necessarily suggests that he's a wrong'un. And then there's that weird scene with Edda and Andrey on either side of the door. And the first time I watched it, I thought I'd missed something because he's wearing gloves and I was like, oh my God, what's he doing? Why isn't he answering the door? Did he just kill the girlfriend? No, he's just doing the washing up and he doesn't want to speak to his sister. So much of this film is like framed suspiciously, which again is kind of clever, but also it just really just serves to mislead you.
Yeah.
That's not even for the detectives for their kind of benefit. It's just like, yeah, let's make Andrey a bit more suspicious now. So Edda and Andrey have this relationship, and she obviously hasn't spoken to him since whatever happened, but she has this one other relationship with this other guy, Loftur, who is an older man.
Also like a random addition,
I guess, but there is a kind of reason he's there. So she tried to get him sent down for being an offender 22 years ago. I was like, God, how old? She must have been like 19 or something.
Her first ever case.
Yeah, that case that just she can never shake. And clearly he was arrested and on trial for like 8 offences or something and acquitted of all of them. She desperately tried over time to, you know, make something stick and it never did. And it's kind of that thing of like, she almost Yoey-like, she just wants this person done. She must truly believe he did something. But we never get any facts about that case. We don't know quite what he did or why he was acquitted, but we know that she cares a lot. And then that kind of doesn't go anywhere during the middle of the film. Yoey's like, we don't need to bring him in. Why would we bring him in? Mm. He was acquitted. There's literally no reason. But then by the end, it turns out maybe he did do something. How did you read Loftus' death?
I don't know if I necessarily read it as a confession or just that his life had been ruined
by her,
by the fact that he was accused of this crime, whether he did it or not.
Mm.
Like, people still, you know, if you are accused of, like, paedophilia and you're acquitted, people don't tend to be like, oh, well, you're actually, according to law, not guilty, like,
That mud still sticks. Yeah, that's so true.
And that his life was ruined, so what's he got left to live for?
And I totally thought about that as well. I think it's quite ambiguous, because, yeah, maybe Edda feels guilty at the end, maybe she feels vindicated. It's hard to know.
I think a lot of the ambiguity, maybe the issue is a lot of the ambiguity and the kind of missing segments of backstory that we've got. In a different film, like a drama, you might be able to fill those spaces and it's fine. But I think the problem is that police procedurals are quite like exposition dependent and like plot dependent. So you kind of need a lot of information in them to move stuff forward. And so I think it seems like a weird choice in this genre, or like for this vehicle, to leave all those things unexplained or unexplored.
Agreed. And you said earlier it felt kind of TV series like, and I feel like maybe it could have been like a 4-episode TV show, build in those plot points, those character moments, the reasons why anyone's doing anything, and it would have, it would have been too long for a film, but a couple of 4-episode TV series would have been kind of perfect procedural wise. And allowed us to explore those. And in a way, I sort of thought it was going to be that, because the opening credits are the most TV crime drama credits I've ever seen. They look exactly like the ones for the Valhalla murders and even for sort of Trapped.
I'm talking about the not perhaps having the emotional connection with at the heart of this. I guess the relationship at the heart of it that could really have done something for that would have been Edda and Andre, the brother and sister.
Yeah.
But because they're estranged, the only scene we see them together in, they're not acting together, they're on two sides of a door. Like, the whole point is that she's so desperate for him to not be involved in this. But we don't really see any of that tension or that relationship play out because they are estranged, which feels like a lost opportunity.
Yeah, and it would make the final scene all the more powerful when she finally comes back, asks for forgiveness, feels guilty, he's in a coma by this point, but she spills her guts and apologizes and all of that, only to 2 minutes later suddenly think something else. We should talk about that.
Ending? Twist? Can we call it a twist? I think it was a bit obviously coming.
Let's call it a twist. No, let's not call it a twist. Let's not call it a twist. He was there all along.
A conclusion. Cool. It was Andre that did it. Of course, the brother of the main policewoman.
If you hadn't thought about it being Andre until the moment that Edda confesses that she's sorry and all of that, then you would know. But, the film tries to keep you guessing so much. And the eyewitnesses, again, they throw a bit of doubt into the situation, which is frustrating from a viewer's point of view. But there are a couple little flourishes there. Like, I like the idea that the eyewitnesses didn't necessarily know what they saw. They wanted to help, but they couldn't. So you have the kind of blonde hair versus brunette, the short hair versus the long hair. And the information to lead you to the killer is right there. It's the guy with the long brunette hair. But they don't get that because it's so kind of confused. I also like the little moment when they're interviewing the two of them and the female colleague says something about her husband. And there's just this quick lingering shot of the guy just sort of like, oh, almost like, ah, I thought we had a thing.
Tiny little Easter egg moment.
Yeah, but you're right. Andrew, it was kind of not telegraphed, but
you could get there. It had to be him.
Do you think? You never thought it would be Ragnar?
No, I thought it actually would be Ragnar.
Ragnar. Because he has the kind of weirdest story.
Yeah, because when we went into... When he had a wall of photos of children and also found out that he was talking to a doll dressed as his mum, then I was like, okay, so now at this point we know he is the person, so it's going to build out from that. And we're going to follow him, you know, the police catching on to him. So I did think that for a while. But then he got cleared not long after that and it was like, oh, actually, no, he was busy the whole day.
That's a creepy moment as well, though. Like, it's a great alibi sitting in the same chair for a whole day. But going back to the home that your mum used to live in and just sitting there, it's creepy but and very sad. Just like, he's got no... doesn't have any family anymore, and he obviously doesn't have any children of his own. So he's like left.
Because I guess there would be two options with the Andre storyline and where it fit into things. One is that it's about how all of these people have been accused of a crime, you know, that they didn't commit, and so their lives have been thrown into disarray, and that he then has had his life ruined when he's an innocent man, and he's the kind of emblem of that. Or that he did it. And I think what the filmmaker's intentions are to basically be like, oh, look, feel sorry for this guy. You know, he's been hounded and his life's been ruined by these false accusations, and be on his side. And then, oh, wait, actually it was him and you were on the side of the baddie. Ha ha ha, twist. But it just didn't, I don't know.
I'm not sure it was
that. The problem I have with any of these kind of murder things, and it goes back to Agatha Christie, right? Actually listening to an Agatha Christie audio book at the moment, one? Murder at the Vicarage.
Okay, nice.
And all I'm doing all the way through is I'm like, I know it's going to be the person that I'm meant to suspect the least. So I'm constant, you know.
But yeah, but she keeps you guessing which one do I suspect the least?
Yes, which she does a bit better. But in some things like TV crime dramas like this, then you're like, well, it's him because he's the one with the connection to the police woman.
And because it's not built out in any other way, there's no reason to think that he's in this film for any other reason, I suppose.
And that can be pulled off. Like, an example of that where that's pulled off really well would be, like, Broadchurch. Do you remember the twist of Broadchurch?
I haven't actually watched Broadchurch, so
that's like, one to get back that's on. Where they basically have this twist.
Okay, great. Thanks for the spoiler.
I'll say no more than that. But they have a similar kind of twist to this, and it is really effective.
Okay.
And you're like, what the hell?
Wow. No.
Whereas in this, you were like, yeah, well, okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, not everything's going to be like full-on Usual Suspects. Oh my God, it was him the whole time. But yes, I agree. But I don't think the end was supposed to make you go, like, exclaim out loud, oh my God! I think it was more of a kind of, it was effectively chilling.
Yes.
But not necessarily because of who it was.
Yes.
Just because it was like, well, this is a guy we don't know anything about. The way he just walked into a playground, picked up some girls, put them in his car and drove off. Like, it's just so cold and clinical.
Yeah. I mean, the main, like, moral of this story seems to be, like, anyone you know could be a paedophile.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
I know, yeah.
It's quite a bleak worldview.
This entire thing is bleak. Like, every single character's troubled in some way, has a terrible past. Not that they're necessarily explored, as we said, but, yeah. I mean, it does look beautiful. in that kind of bleak, white, grey, Scandi-Nordic way.
So did you see... So now we've kind of got to the end, so we can talk about it.
Yeah, okay.
Did you see, like, Andri's perpetration? Perpetrating this crime being quite, like, random or...
Yeah.
But but what wasn't really filled out was we had those diary entries.
Yes.
About my friend, the lion, comes and plays with us and he's fun.
Doesn't reflect Andrew's personality at all.
No. On which note, why did the mum rip those pages out and destroy them?
Yeah, I had this question too. It seems, I know her behaviour gets slightly erratic.
Because I thought, oh, it's going to be like, turned out that she had a boyfriend and it was him.
Yeah,
or like,
that would make sense.
You know, one
it?
Of the characters was her
boyfriend. She felt guilty.
Boyfriend, and she thought, oh God, it's them. I feel bad. Hide that connection.
But then she still knows who the killer is. If that would mean she knew who the killer was, that would be even worse.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell what's going through her mind. Obviously, it's grief.
Is it just because she's kind of so disturbed by it that she...
She feels guilty that she didn't know any of this was going on and perhaps wanted to hide the true depth of how much she'd missed. I don't know. It felt a bizarre thing for her to do. I didn't help. I really liked the way that Edda's daughter just came out with, oh, a lion. Yeah, my friend's a Leo. Well, we better follow that route.
Absolutely terrible.
It was pretty random. But it did lead them to Andri, just not at the right time, I guess.
Are they good night?
I couldn't know.
Here, you go, helmet.
Vinkona mín er ljón.
Hvað mennur?
Hún er ljón. Ég er krabbi.
I feel like we've been a bit hard on this film. Was there anything that you thought it did well?
I think it made me feel like nervous to be in Reykjavik. I'm glad I didn't watch this before I went in November. I think it set the tone well. Like it was definitely supposed to be a film about like the terrible nature of murder and paedophilia and it looked fantastic.
And I would say also that I thought the performances were really strong.
Yeah, pretty much. They didn't always have stuff to work with. But yeah, I think they did. I think Magni was a relatively sympathetic character and played really well. Those characters with maybe learning difficulties, Ragnar and Magni, I thought were portrayed really well and sensitively, even as their stories were perhaps a bit more kind of...
Troubling
and, in one case, quite OTT. But these things have happened. There's precedents for these things. So, you know, like, yeah, the performances were great. It looked great. The music, it all set a tone so well. I'm just not sure that it hung together well enough that it was satisfying by the end.
Mm.
Was there anything stand out for you?
No, I'd agree on those points that the performances, the visuals, the tone... were effectively done. I think it just didn't have the underpinning of the structure, like a well-structured narrative. And I was lacking a real kind of emotional investment in the characters.
I would like to have known Edda better. I would like to have known anything about Yoey. Like, why does she hate him? Maybe because... of she knows what he's like when he goes into interviews and stuff. He just wants to get a case closed. I don't know. I would have liked a bit more of that kind of character development. But, you know, it is relatively effective tonally, like we say. Mm. Final question then. What do you think Edda's going to do?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this. hand him in.
You think? I mean, he's in a coma.
I think she... is a moral person, right? And she's like a person that's like duty bound and she needs to solve the case. She's a police officer in her heart, you know. She's about like justice and am I projecting too much onto
her? I think maybe a little bit. I feel like that's what you wanted. And there are moments where she is like that, of course, where she's like confronting Yoey about the letter was a hoax, what are you doing? Or, you know, the whole false confession thing. But I don't know, I feel like, and then this is probably me projecting as well, but once she has apologized to Andre for not being there for him and all of that stuff, that she's like kind of finally at a place where she's ready to build that relationship with her brother again, only to find out that he may be a killer, probably a killer. Maybe she'll just like
let it go.
I mean, she probably won't do that, but I guess it's a possibility.
I quite like the ambiguity of what's going to happen in the future.
Mm.
It's quite a fun note to end it on. Fun being probably the wrong word.
No, not a fun film, but a film with lots to recommend it and lots to discuss. How did you find Cruelty? Too depressing? Too many plot holes? Too many sex offenders? Or was it bang on the money for bleak Nordic noir? It's always fun taking a look at Icelandic films that seem to try to fit into exact genres, even if they don't completely work. And it's certainly a contrast to last week's film, comedy-drama Driving Mum, and next week's comedy, Northern Comfort, which recently dropped on Netflix UK. Before we go, a reminder that you can follow us on X, Instagram and Threads at KvikMindapod. That's KvikMyndApod. And you can support us by chucking us a little coffee money at ko-fi.com/KvikMindapod. We're also now on Discord. Just search for KvikMindapod and join in all kinds of discussions with fellow listeners from around the world. Also, the audio of every episode of the podcast is now on YouTube, and we have an actual Wikipedia page. Thanks, Kieran. See you next week. Tack, God bless. Thanks and goodbye.